Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that rarely curses, almost always has a plan, but is willing to rip your heart out. Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. In episode 14, Selena has her first vampire interrogation. At the mansion, we loaded our subject into an interrogation-style room underground. There was a two-way mirror, and the room was wired for audio surveillance. I watched John and Devlin work with the vampire on the other side of the two-way. They had decided to try and see what information they could glean from him. The vampire was parked behind a sleek, gray metal table. He looked a little worse for wear. The silver chains that crisscrossed his body and anchored him in place left angry welts wherever they touched his skin. Overall, his skin was growing more and more pallid as his injuries healed more slowly due to the silver. "Let's start with your name," John drawled. The vampire simply glared. "You can make this easy on yourself, or you can make it painfully hard," Devlin warned. He had some sort of black kit wrapped in black fabric in front of him. "If I didn't know better, I'd say it was a chef's cutlery set." The vampire spat on the table. Devlin jumped up and stomped around the table to jerk the vampire to his feet. He reached into the back pocket of his jeans and pulled out a wallet. The vampire shouted obscenities at him and tried to snap at him with his teeth. Devlin threw the wallet down on the table and shoved the vampire back down into his seat. John began to rifle through the contents of the wallet. "Tim Johnson, 7923 Van Buren Street, Apartment 3A. Born December 13, 1981. He smiled at the prisoner and flipped towards the back of the wallet, pulling out wads of money. There were $100 bills and 20s. "You're well paid for a bloodsucker. What is your day job?" John laughed at his own corny joke. "Are we going to find more monsters like you in apartment 3A? Devlin asked. The vampire remained silent and seemed to prefer shooting daggers with his black eyes. Devlin turned to John. "Well, looks like he wants to do this the hard way." "More fun for us," John grinned. Devlin unrolled the chef's pack to reveal an assortment of silver blades and other tools that looked like they could be used for surgery. He pulled out a gleaming skewer that had to have been at least a foot long and an inch thick. The vampire's hard veneer cracked just a little as he glanced at the implement. Devlin returned to stand behind the vampire with the skewer in hand and ripped the fiend's pretty blue Ralph Lauren shirt all the way down to his navel. He positioned the skewer over his left shoulder, just below the clavicle. The probe sizzled at contact. The vampire stifled a groan. "So, Tim, are we going to find any more vampires at apartment 3A? Devlin growled low down in his ear. "I didn't know vampires could sweat, but a bead of it formed at Tim's temple, and it coursed its way down his face." Devlin lost his patience and used his superhuman strength to shove the skewer violently through Tim's flesh. The tip came out his back, hitting the metal chair and breaking off. Tim howled in pain. "Yes, there are two others," Tim screamed. "Where are they now?" John leaned forward, eager for the rush of information. "They patrol the southern end of the city. They should still be out hunting," Tim wheezed. "They will come looking for me when I don't show up before dawn. They'll slaughter you all like dirty pigs." Devlin twisted the skewer in his flesh as he said, "We don't like threats, Tim. Just stick to the facts." Tim whimpered in his seat. John kept things moving right along. "Now where do your vampire roommates patrol?" "Go to hell," Tim snarled. "You're not going to use me to get them." Devlin practically chuckled with glee as he walked around back to his torture kit. He selected a chisel and a heavy mallet and waved them in front of Tim's face. "Say, Tim, do your fingers grow back if we chop them off with silver?" He paused for a response that never came. "Can you at least tell me if you are a righty or a lefty?" Tim tried to be stoic and keep his mouth shut. He clamped his fangs down into his bottom lip to keep from making any sounds. Two rivulets of blood trickled down the lower half of his face. Devlin worked his right hand out from the chains and laid it on the table. He positioned the chisel and mallet over his index finger. "Where do your friends patrol?" Devlin asked one more time. He raised the mallet and took off the index finger. The finger and blood spurted across the table. Tim yowled with pain and his dark eyes rolled back into his head. "The Bellwood Mall," he hiccuped. "They patrol there every night for the past month." "Tim, you're doing a good job," John said. "Now we have a really hard question for you. I think whole limbs will have to come off if you don't answer this one carefully." Tim's eyes flickered around the room. He was desperate to find a way out. Devlin went back to his torture kit and pulled out a wicked serrated blade. It was meant for sawing through bones and tendons. "What do you know about Marcus's whereabouts?" John asked. "No," Tim shouted. "Kill me. Just kill me. I'm already dead if I tell you that." "Oh, he admits he at least knows something, Devlin," Devlin said, flashing his eyes on John. John smacked the table. "Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner." Tim was terrified. He struggled in his chains, tearing open new wounds. The chains dug deeper into his skin until he was a mess of oozing black blood. He began yelling for help. Devlin moved behind him, contemplating his next move. "Well, John, are you a wing man or a leg man?" he asked. "I'm all about the wings, my man," John replied, laughing. Devlin dropped the mammoth blade against Tim's left shoulder, right above the socket, and began to saw maliciously into his flesh. Tim gurgled horribly. His eyes rolled back into his head. He passed out. "Well, I'll be damned," John said. "I didn't know those fiends could pass out like that." Abe manipulated the intercom system and said, "Okay, fellas, I think you need to give it a rest." Devlin wiped the black blood off on Tim's clothes, then collected his kit and exited the room with John. "I was worried that soon enough there wouldn't be enough vampire left for me to experiment on. He'd either be hacked to pieces or too mentally unstable. Either way, I wasn't looking forward to tonight's events. What I'd seen was gruesome. The last thing I really wanted to be doing was drinking vampire blood. However, the weight of a people was on my shoulders. It took about half an hour for Tim the vampire to wake up. I watched him come to and looked around groggily through the two-way mirror. I asked Abe to bring me a glass and a paring knife. Several of the other men offered to go into the room with me, but I declined all offers. Devlin slipped in momentarily to make sure the chains were still holding, then he too left. Once I had my simple tools, I took a deep breath and entered the stark room. I decided that I wouldn't give Tim any clues about my actions, nor would I torture him for information. Tim eyed me warily. "Who are you?" he asked, slurring his words. His dark eyes lit on the knife in my hand. "Have you come to put me out of my misery?" he almost whined. I realized that without this being a life or death situation, I was a little squeamish about using the knife. However, I stood behind the vampire and put the blade against his neck. He leaned into it and whispered, "End me." I sliced into the meat of his neck. Blood spurted from his carotid, and I placed the glass beneath the wound to catch his essence. The knife wasn't silver, and his wound healed by the time a third glass was full. I tipped the glass to my lips and I drank. I felt the familiar boost to my strength and senses. Tim was a lightning rod for my attention. Like an invisible thread, I wound my way into his consciousness. I felt his hopelessness and fear, like thick sludge I had to dig through. I held either side of his head in my hands and slid in deeper. Then everything sort of clicked into place. "Where is Marcus?" I asked. Tim was calm and pliant in my hands. "When he's in town, he stays at 9341 Marshall Lane, apartment F. Where are his headquarters?" I realized I had to be very specific. "I don't know. I've never been summoned there before." It was the truth. "Do you know when he'll visit Richmond next?" I pressed. "He'll be here in 2 nights. Tim almost sighed. "What are his plans for his visits?" I began to feel a sense of urgency. "To gather more soldiers."
"To make new vampires?"
"Yes."
"Why does he need so many?"
I demanded to know.
"After he kills the one, he plans to take over major cities. He's made connections with local drug lords."
"Why is he concerned about the drug market?"
This was a twist I wasn't expecting.
"He's found an additive to sell on the streets that gets humans high, but they are more easily controlled. What does he ultimately want? Humans as slaves. My connection to Tim began to change. It was no longer easy and pliable. Instead of me directing the conversation, he began to offer me information about himself. I was turned 4 months ago in a back alley in the West District, he said. His voice was no longer feathery, but taking on a firmer tone. I had a wife and a child. That night I changed from being a husband and a father to a killer. I am but an instrument in this war. His voice warbled. His face turned to look up at me. Selena, I see you. I'm coming for you. I gasped and broke contact with my hands. Tim smiled at me as I shifted to the side to move away from him. His body swelled, and he twitched in his seat. With Herculean strength, he broke free of the chains and stood. I could hear the men on the other side of the glass drawing their weapons and racing to get into the room. Marcus was talking through Tim. He had a tight hold of him. We would not be safe with this vampire trapped in the house. Everything Tim saw and heard would be fed to Marcus. I realized in that moment that Marcus must have turned him. It was Marcus's blood that flowed in him, and for a minute through me, I knew what I had to do. Tim grabbed me by the shoulders and bared his fangs. Devlin and the others burst into the room as I raised my hands to Tim's chest. I used the very strength that Marcus had given me with his blood and dug through Tim's sternum until his heart was in my hands. Tim's eyes widened with the shock and horror of what I'd done. I squeezed his heart until it popped in my hand like overripe fruit. He dropped to the floor and began to turn to gray ash. With his death, Marcus's presence also left. We were safe for now. I was on my way upstairs when I saw a figure through the window to the English maze. Curious, I decided to investigate. I heard the soft murmur of a woman's voice talking outside. I paused at the door, feeling for the energy of the alarm. I turned the knob and pulled the door open. Outside, pacing the width of the cobblestone walkway, was Missy on a cell phone. On the island, the closest thing she had to technology was an AM/FM radio and a satellite phone. I need some time, she was saying. I can't get everything into position with the snap of my fingers. She finished exasperated. Then she saw me watching her. She snapped the phone closed. Oh, hi, Selena, she bubbled over. Missy, I replied curtly. I was just calling my kids in Colorado. My oldest has a birthday coming up. He wants me to send him some of his favorite comic books. You know how that is. Kids. Yeah, I understand that, I said hesitantly. I turned on my heel and went back inside. Something just didn't seem quite right to me. However, I was momentarily distracted by Maxine, who was making her way to the kitchen. Maxine, I called as I ran to catch up to her. She immediately turned to me. Selena, I feel I haven't seen you in ages. You must tell me everything about your trip. Maxine looked good in an orange sweatsuit. Her coffee eyes sparkled with health and optimism. We walked arm in arm to the kitchen where she fixed herself the midnight snack, and I made some tea. We sat around the kitchen island on bar stools. I told her about the trip to India, the detour through Tiki Island, and ended with the escapade in the interrogation room. Almost an hour later, she was caught up and she sat there speechless. Then she burst out into laughing. Well, Chica, you've certainly had yourself an adventure. I bet you didn't expect her to summon me quite like this, she said. I was relieved. I imagine that my experiences sounded like pure fantasy to someone who had not lived them. No, I most definitely did not expect all of this. But what is this all leading to? She asked, sobering. Marcus knows you're the one. He knows where this place is. You're right. If you don't go to him, he will come to you, she said, tapping a nail on the countertop. Well, come look. Maxine hopped off the bar stool and led me to the entertainment room. She turned on the TV and flipped through several news channels. Some good has come of this, she began. There haven't been any more boyfriend killings. If I were him, I'd regroup and come straight here. This is the biggest target. Already know we're outnumbered. All we can count on is that he wants secrecy about the vampires. He doesn't want to make such a big showing that the general public is alerted to their existence. Maxine turned off the TV and sat down on the black leather couch. He can make new vampires whenever he needs to. We, however, don't have time to travel the world recruiting new warriors. I need to find his weakness, I said as I plopped down in a beige and black lazy boy. Where can we get him
that will hurt the most. Maxine clapped her hands together. Loyalty. These vampires are loyal to him. Is it out of respect or fear? I think it's fear. What could you promise them if you were their leader? Maxine asked, growing more excited.
What are you saying?
Next to Marcus, you're like a vampire queen.
A queen?
Yes, you can control them. You can get them to do things they wouldn't ordinarily do.
But the effects don't last, I countered. Plus, after what I saw today, Marcus has his own connection to the vampires that he created.
You also saw that he used the connection to inspire fear.
Yes, I couldn't disagree with that. Make it so they fear you more.
For a time, they wanted you alive because they didn't know what you could do.
True, but now they're back to wanting me dead.
What do they fear from Marcus?
Death.
What can they fear from you? Maxine asked.
I thought for a moment.
What do they want to do to humans? She continued.
Make us slaves. These monsters value power and blood. Use the blood to take away their power.
If only I could create a few slaves, I thought out loud.
Vampire slaves that would do whatever you tell them to do.
And what would I make them do? Act cute and cuddly? I almost laughed at the image that created.
Anything.
Like walk into the sun and burn themselves up.
What you need is publicity.
Maxine was fierce in her determination.
My very own vampire PR.
Exactly. Put on a big show of what you can do and make sure word gets around.
You must show them you are bigger and badder than Marcus.
What's a little death threat when you can watch your friends be compelled to commit a slow, painful suicide by the sun?
It would shake their loyalty to Marcus.
I was becoming a believer.
And you can't run a kingdom without subjects.
We have to find another nest.
The wheels were turning in my mind.
A big one.
Have a few of them do your bidding, then burn themselves up.
Maxine was positively gleeful.
Terrifying the rest would spread like wildfire.
This is like calling Marcus out.
Would you rather keep running and hiding? She countered.
No, I want to end this.
And you can.
Pick your stage.
After Maxine and I finished our discussion, I left to go find Devlin. He was in the command room with half of the other brothers. They were surveying the city for vampire activity. I shared with him and the others the next steps to bring down Marcus. It took some convincing, but he and the others were on board. The plan would require finding new leads to larger nests in the area between Richmond and D.C. They already had all the technology and surveillance equipment needed to begin such a mission. They needed to look for signs of vampire activity, such as areas with a high number of unexplained disappearances. There were also real estate holdings to search. Vampires loved large abandoned homes and rural communities. The less neighbors, the better. Devlin began assigning units right away. They were all ready to start the night. We retrieved vital intelligence and found homes currently vacant that fit vampire needs. Abe and John would investigate a mansion 5 miles outside the city limits. Those two would check for evidence of vampires. They would stay long enough to confirm whether or not vampires showed up near dawn to retire for the day, then plant surveillance equipment. There was another home 10 miles north of Mooresville. Chow and Gerald were assigned to this task. Devlin dispatched his men with the confidence and ease of a born leader. Then he turned to Maxine and me.
You two need more training, he said.
No way. Let's leave Maxine out of this, I protested. She can stay here where it's safe.
If this doesn't work out, nowhere will be safe from Market.
There must be something else she can do, I almost pleaded.
Tomlin spoke up. Maxine is one of us now. She must be ready to fight.
I don't want to be hiding and defenseless, Maxine added.
I stubbornly conceded and we headed down to the hall, to the training room. Devlin, Tomlin, Maxine, and I. The place was just as I remembered. Large, clean, and seemingly innocent. However, the cabinets lining the walls held things that were far from innocent. The brothers had a large cache of sophisticated weapons, all designed to kill vampires.
Tomlin and Maxine went to the far right of the room to suit up and begin swords play.
Devlin wanted to show me how to use the UV light sword.
At the back of the training room, there was a modified shooting range. I spent the rest of the night training how to be a better vampire hunter.
Thank you for listening. Tune in, same time, same place, for more of the adventure of Blood Magic.